How aware are you?
You're probably aware that mammograms are a great way to detect breast cancer.
And that regular, moderate walking can be good for heart health.
But are you aware that the fifth most common cancer in the United States is uterine cancer?
And that the average age at diagnosis is 60?
Well, I definitely wasn't when I was diagnosed with endometrial cancer at the age of 32.
And that's exactly what inspired this podcast.
We are Mary and Alex, a mother-daughter duo engaged in multi-generational dialogue surrounding subjects related to gynecologic cancer, women's healthcare, and various other topics that impact our daily lives.
We are
Down There
Aware.
Welcome back to another episode of Down There Aware. And do we have a story for you? Oh. If you listened to last week's episode, we reposted one of our favorites with a little bit of an intro. And we said that we would have more information coming. And so that's what this episode intends.
More information indeed.
More information and no answers. Isn't that, the story of our lives? So about 3 weeks ago, I was in Texas, and while I was there, I was staying in a hotel, and in the middle of the night, woke up in excruciating pain.
Back pain.
And as a history, I have a herniated disc. I've had it for many, many years. I've well managed the pain and have put off surgery and put off other treatments, and it's been good. And I even had just gotten a recent pain injection before my trip. And so I was feeling good, and it really took me by surprise. So, after waking up in intense pain, I did all of my PT stretches thinking, okay, I just, need to figure this out. And the pain increasingly intensified, and then my entire left leg went completely numb. My foot was numb and I couldn't walk. So, I tried to get an Uber. I tried to get a Lyft. I tried to call a taxi cab to take me to the hospital. And there was none available at 4 a.m. So, I ended up calling an ambulance, and which I really just hated to do. But anyway, I went to a hospital and got some pain meds and confirmation that yes, this is probably your herniated disc. And, after that, my flight back wasn't for another day. So I hung out in the hotel room in agony for a whole day. And then I flew home. So since that time, I've just been going from doctor to doctor, waiting to see what we can do, what diagnosis we have.
Well, we might want to back up just a little bit and give a little more detail about the Texas experience. During your time in the ER, you and I were texting and or talking on the phone, and you were trying to keep me updated. I was a bit frustrated when they discharged you, because they had given you injections of pain meds, but they only sent you home with muscle relaxers, and you said those did nothing to help the pain. So that was frustrating, because you knew you were coming home the next day, and you knew you had a long plane flight, and you were in terrible pain. So it was like, how in the world are you going to stay on that flight, be in the airports, change planes, all of that when you're in terrible pain? And that, of course, brings up the whole opioid crisis, which we've talked about before, and we're not going to really need to get into it right now, except to say what a mess that is for people who aren't addicts, and they need those pain medications.
Yeah. I mean, it was the ER experience was very interesting. Of course, there are two hospitals in the place where I was. And when I looked up hospitals for an Uber or a Lyft to take me to, I had picked the other one than the one that the ambulance ended up taking me to. And it was the quickest ER experience I had ever had. And I wouldn't say that was a good thing, because while they were simultaneously like taking my insurance and checking me in, the nurse came in with discharge papers, which it was very, very odd. And they clearly wanted me in and out of there, which I understand that's kind of the purpose of an ER, is to triage, treat, and, you know, move you along, whether that's into the hospital or out. But like mom said, you know, they gave me these injections, and it was interesting. The nurse or the doctor actually came in and said, we're going to give you this medication and an injection and see how you do. And then as she was walking out, she turned around and said, actually, we're going to give you a little bit of that, not the full dose, to see how you handle it. And so I was like, okay, whatever. And she gave me that, and they were like, okay, where's your pain? And I said, well, it went from like a 9.5 to an 8. But it's still pretty painful. And they didn't give me anything else. So, you know, it is unfortunate that because of insurance and addict situations and everything, they're so much more hesitant to give someone pain care that they need. I mean, clearly I wouldn't have called the ER, you know, and honestly, I wouldn't have called the ER if it was just pain. I was very concerned about my inability to walk and having a numb leg and foot. That really scared me.
Yeah. And so you got back to the hotel and you still had the numbness and the problem with the foot, which we now know is drop foot. You couldn't control your foot enough to pick it up to walk. And you're back at the hotel and we're talking, trying to figure out how you're going to get home. And I can't really remember, did you call your pain management person first or what?
So I ended up calling the pain management office that I had seen here locally in Tallahassee. And they prescribed me for when I got home a steroid taper, which I had done previously before, and it worked well for the pain. But that wouldn't be ready until I got home. So then as mom and I were talking, we said, you know, I said, I just need something, because I'm going to have to sit on two separate flights for multiple hours and however long in the airport. I don't know how I'm going to be physically able to sit for that long. Because at this point I was in so much pain that I was just shifting, you know, every 2 minutes to find a relatively comfortable position that never happened. And so I called my primary care and said, is there any way you could order me a short term, like 2 day prescription for pain medicine? And he, knowing me for over 10 years, was absolutely amazing and said, yes, we'll call in. Where's the closest, you know, pharmacy to you? Can you get there? And he called and they rejected the prescription. They wouldn't fill it. And so I called back and talked to the doctor again. And he said, okay, we'll investigate. And so he called me at like, I mean, I was in Central Time Zone and he called me at like 6 p.m. Central. So it was like 7 p.m. here. He was working late and he had been on the phone with CVS, and he even called other pharmacies in the area. And there is a law in Texas that if a doctor prescribes a medication who is out of state, they won't fill it.
Now, we're not sure if that's specific to opioids or narcotics or any prescription, but in this case, it didn't matter. Alex couldn't get what she needed. And her primary care doc, like she said, she's had him for over 10 years. He knows she's not an addict. He knows she doesn't rely on pain meds. He also knows she has had a lot of very unique medical issues,
to say the least,
and has dealt with them. So they have a relationship. And that's why we were certain he would try to do what he could. And clearly the Texas law, whatever it is, was a huge issue.
He even took it a step further and called the emergency room
where
I had been and talked to the charge nurse who had been on call while I was there, or who had been on in her shift on duty when I was there. And she even said, no, we're not going to prescribe anything else. And he was like, I am her doctor. I would like to prescribe it. And they still said no. So, again, like mom said, we don't know if this is every prescription, if it's just narcotics or opioids or whatever. But like, how are you supposed to travel? I mean, it was just really, really frustrating.
But kudos to him. I mean, you know, I know we've had some bad experiences that we've shared with the medical. I mean, we've had some bad experiences with the medical community that we've shared. But we also try to give praise when it's deserved. And this is more than deserved. He really went above and beyond the call of duty and tried everything he could. And he still could not help his patient.
Right. And he tried things, you know, that I didn't even ask for.
Yeah.
That, you know, he really tried to think outside the box. And, you know, so needless to say, I'll be sticking with him as my GP for a long, long time.
He's also my GP, which I love.
Yes. And I got to him because my best friend, Rachel, when I moved back to Tallahassee, she's like, yeah, he's who I see. Go see him.
Yeah.
You know, that was a really interesting kind of eye-opening experience that even though we're one country, like states can put up different laws and prevent medical care in some ways. This experience also really opened my eyes to, cause I was alone. I didn't really know anybody in that area. And it was in the middle of the night, didn't want to call anybody. And so having to figure out, I can't really walk. So every time I had to leave my hotel room, I had to call down and ask for a wheelchair. That was fun. And then, you know, nobody could go pick up my prescription for me. I had to Uber Eats everything. And then I would write to the driver. I'd be like, please, please, please bring it up to my room. I'll give you an extra tip. I'm really sorry if you're not comfortable coming to a room. I'll meet you by the elevator. I mean, like, because I was just in a state of desperation. And same thing in the airport. It really opened my eyes to how not ungrateful, but unaware we are of just everyday things running through an airport. They changed my gate on my last leg of the flight, and it was only about 200 yards in the same terminal, but it was agonizing
because they had already taken
the wheelchair
away.
And I had to walk. And I just like silently cried to myself into my mask. But it was just one of those things where you really understand what you take for granted. So an eye-opening experience in the great old state of Texas. But since we got back, it's kind of been a little bit of a circus, I would say.
Well, and just to close that chapter about the Texas experience, what the primary care doc did was call in a prescription so that I could pick it up, and when I picked Alex up at the airport, she would have it and could take it right then. And
yeah, mom, I got into the car and she handed me the prescription bottle and a bottle of water and was like, here, take it, do what you need to do. Because, you know, she knew. And again, like your parents know you, your doctors know you, who you've seen for a long time, your friends and your family. And so my mom knows I am not an addict.
And we've talked about my brother and sister were addicts, and we as a family dealt with addiction. And so I'm not going to just push narcotics on my daughter.
Right. And, you know, we navigated that very carefully because as the week progressed, I stayed at mom and dad's house for almost a week after that. Because there was no way I was taking care of Sadie. I really needed all of that help. But we even, you know, the pain lessened over the course of a week. And so we took that in stride, and I didn't even complete the prescription because I moved to ibuprofen and then I moved to not needing pain medication. So, you know, my doctor knew that I was capable of that. And so unfortunately, Texas didn't trust me.
Yeah. And you're right. What are people supposed to do? Not travel? It really does make you nervous about being somewhere and not being able to get what you need.
And I, you know, I had an experience. So when I was 12, I flew with some church friends to Seattle, and it was a summer break or kind of thing. And so I was there, and it was right after I had come home from swim camp, and at swim camp I had had pink eye, and it cleared up, whatever, went to Seattle. Well, it came back with like real vigor. And so we were able to just transfer the prescription from the Walgreens in Orlando to the Walgreens in Seattle. And the people I was with went and picked it up for me, and it was fine. So like I had that experience in my mind, and it just didn't even occur to me that there would be an issue at all. Cause my doctor is a doctor. Like he has a medical degree, you know, like
my doctor's a doctor,
right? He's credentialed. I'm not seeing the guy on the corner. I mean, like he's credentialed. Anyway, it just, it still kind of blows my mind that that exists, but every state is different and every state's autonomous. And so for whatever reason, and I haven't dug into it. And my doctor, even when he called me, and he felt so badly that he couldn't do what I had needed. And, he said, I even tried to get the pharmacy tech to give me like the bill number that I could look it up and see what the details were. And they couldn't even give me that. So I don't know what law it is. If you're from Texas or, you know,
yeah, let us know,
let us know, because we would love to learn more about that. Cause it was strange.
Well, and I'll just interject that I have since written a thank you note to him, because I am an advocate for writing letters when something goes wrong, and we've talked about that on the podcast. But I also am a huge advocate for writing letters when something goes right, and doctors need that, because I'm sure they get a lot more negativity than they get positivity. So I wanted to be sure, as a mama, you know, I was grateful that he went the extra mile, because I felt helpless being here and unable to do anything. So we're back in Tallahassee, and
well, and so I went to the place I have always gone for all of my pain management. When I was first diagnosed with my disc herniation, it was this orthopedic clinic that I went to. And so I made an appointment. Well, they couldn't get me in until like the end of April. And we're talking, you know, this was the end of March, so a month later. And I was like, I can't live like this. So this clinic in town happens to have like an equivalent of an urgent care. Mm-hmm. Where you can walk in or make an appointment and, you know, and they'll see you right away. So we see somebody there, does a quick neurological exam, confirms what we're thinking. They do x-rays, and then discover that I can't have another MRI because I have a defibrillator. And so, from there, he kind of, you know, gives me, a plan of saying, I'm going to take all this information and move it up the chain and send it to the neurosurgery team, because I think that's really your next step, is to talk to the neurosurgeon and see what your options are. And so I get a call saying, I'm so sorry, you won't be able to see our neurosurgery team because your BMI is higher than we will operate on. Period. Like, full stop. And, you know, I get that that's something that a doctor can make that choice, you know, because there are risks, greater risks involved with surgery by being fat and overweight and having a higher BMI. But inherently with the surgery that I'm kind of thinking I will need, there aren't any added risks for that surgery in particular, other than the other ones where fat people tend to bleed more, can have a harder time with anesthesia, all of those things. So it was kind of a shock to the system, at the time. And like, when I first saw him, I was overweight, not as overweight as I am now, but I was overweight. And never once did he say, if you need surgery, I won't be able to operate on you. He said, you will need surgery, so push it off as far as you can with PT and
so
pain management.
Surgery
was discussed. I mean, he is a neurosurgeon, but he never said, you know, and, you know, hindsight's 2020. If he had said that, would I have changed my life and gotten to an average BMI? I don't know.
And I don't think you're trying to blame him by saying that.
No.
But I think you're right that you don't know if that might have made all the difference in the world. And in comparison, when I have had knee joint issues in the past, the orthopedic surgeon every time has said something to me like, for every pound you carry, your joint, when you take a step, your joint feels, I don't remember if it's 5 pounds or 10 pounds or whatever, but it's a lot. And that has helped me be more conscious of when I had knee pain. Well, if you'd lose 10 pounds, you know, it's helped me kind of monitor myself. So I know in my case, it's helped. I don't think it can hurt.
Certainly. And I also think my frustration was, to me, this is an urgent issue because I could end up with permanent nerve damage. I don't know. I'm not a doctor. I don't know other than I know my foot and my leg is numb and I'm having extreme difficulty walking. I'm having to work from home temporarily. Thank you so much to my employer that I'm able to have that flexibility and still be able to do my job and not have to take time off. But I mean, we went to Trader Joe's. They gave me a boot, so that has been helping. But we went to Trader Joe's. We were maybe there 30 minutes.
Yeah, the most.
And that exhausted me from hobbling around the grocery store. And so,
well, and it's hard for people who are listening to understand the issues with your gait, how you have to lift your leg and manipulate your foot. And
yeah, it's really hard to describe. Yeah. But because I can't pick my foot up at the ankle, like you would normally when you walk like heel to toe, I have to like swing my leg outward. And that causes hip issues. So now, you know, there's pain in other areas. And anyway, it's an issue, right? And it needs to be fixed. So the people who said they can't operate on me because I'm too fat, sent me to UF Health.
But let me say before we move to that, what bothered me the most about, like you said, if the doctor has a BMI cutoff, that's his choice. But nobody from that practice said, we're not going to be able to operate on you. However, we understand you're in terrible pain and you have some nerve damage that's causing these issues. So we're going to do this. There was no alternative other than to send you to someone else.
And there was no urgency.
Yeah, no urgency whatsoever.
And even if they couldn't do anything for me except send me to someone else and refer me to another practice, there wasn't even urgency in that referral because UF Health got back with me and the first available appointment they have for a virtual appointment is June 3rd.
So not even an exam.
No, it would literally
2 months away
be telling someone what happened and how I'm feeling, period. And then I would have to come in for a real evaluation. So that was extremely frustrating that there was no. And I know that we all feel our personal issues are urgent. If this were just pain, I would feel less urgent about it. I'm really concerned because of permanent nerve damage. I'm 35. I don't need permanent nerve damage. You know, if it can be fixed, I would like for it to be fixed.
Well, and the next little chapter that you're about to talk about verified a reason for concern about permanent nerve damage.
Absolutely. So after I got word from UF Health, and you know, we shouldn't have expected anything more out of the Gators, but it's okay.
Don't say that. Your brother might be listening.
He's not, but that's okay. But so I Googled, you know, spine practices in the state of Florida and started looking. And the closest one and most reputable one was Mayo Clinic in Jacksonville. And actually, while I was searching, mom and I were on the phone and she said, why don't you look at Mayo and Jacksonville? And I said, actually, they just popped up. So I
great
put it,
minds.
Yeah. So I put in a request. They got right back with me. I mean, like within 24 hours. And they had me scheduled in 2 days.
Yeah. 2 days.
2 days. So we drove over to Jacksonville, had the appointment. And this appointment was with a DO who is a part of their spine
rehabilitation
area. And I understood that I wasn't going to get in with a surgeon right away because they need to evaluate if I really need to see a surgeon. And so I loved him.
Well, let's talk about the day before we drove to Jacksonville when we were getting medical records.
Oh, okay. So we're jumping around a little bit, but we're trying to keep it chronological.
Because it all just happened.
It all just happened. And mom's keeping me on track. So this is fun. So this is a new practice. I need all of my medical records sent to this practice. Now, because it's in 2 days, Mayo asked if I would physically bring the records instead of having them sent, just because it would be faster and it would be a guarantee that I could give it to them and they could scan it right in. So there were really only two places in town that I needed records from. One was this orthopedic practice that I had had all of my previous spine appointments with, whether that was pain management, neurosurgery, all
X-rays.
Of that, X-ray, all of that was kind of there. They even had an in-house MRI when I first started seeing them. So when I was able to have an MRI, that was held at their office. And then the other one was the local radiology place where everybody gets their scans and stuff. And so I just needed all of my low back scans, whether that was CTs or MRIs or X-rays. So I call the radiology place and she says, give me 5 minutes and I'll have these discs ready for you. Say what? And then I said, can you also, if there are any notes from the radiologists or anybody, can you also include those? She said, yes. And she said, I'm actually leaving. It was at the end of the day. She said, I'm actually leaving. And I said, that's fine. I wasn't planning on coming until tomorrow morning. Perfect. So those were ready in 5 minutes. Mm-hmm. All I had to do when I got there was give them my ID that they confirmed that I was who I said I was, handed me the discs and the paperwork. Boom, done. I think I was there maybe 3 minutes. Mom couldn't even park the car before right. She had to come around and pick me up again. So then the orthopedic place, I call, go through their, you know, phone system, click, I don't know, 4 or 5 or whatever it was for records. And a person comes on the phone and I can't understand what they're saying because they have a very thick foreign accent. And finally, I gather that this practice has outsourced their records department. And all she can tell me is that I need to fill out the form that's on this practice's website to get my own records. So I said, okay. So I fill out the form. I fax the form. Who faxes anymore?
That company.
So I fax the form and then I did as she asked and I emailed this email address to, you know, say I just faxed this. And she gets back with me and says, we didn't receive it, but we have another request from UF Health. And I'm like, oh, Lord, help me. This is a nightmare. So anyway, back and forth and back and forth and back and forth. I still don't have those records.
Well, initially they said it would take 7 to 10 days
to just process it.
Yeah. And we're talking, isn't everything digital these days?
And they're my records.
Yeah.
I'm not having them sent to a practice. I'm not having them sent to another provider. I just want them for myself. And so I still don't have those in hand. Now the imaging, because they didn't outsource the imaging. So I was able to pick that up from the practice, but, just very, very frustrating that one practice was super easy, had everything organized, and then the other outsourced. And this is not, I have, since then, I've talked to some friends who also go to this clinic for other issues, but orthopedic issues, and they have all had the same issues with the outsourced records department. So, yeah, it's just frustrating. And unnecessary, you know, everything's digital these days. I should be able to log into the portal and get them first off. But yeah. That is
why do we have a portal?
Right. If I can't get my own records. So that was kind of a nightmare. But it all kind of washed away because once we got to Mayo.
Oh, wow.
Everything was just amazing. They have an app where you walk in and you say, I'm here, and you check in, and it's just everything's in line. Anyway, so the DO did a very, very thorough neurological exam, and he said, this is exactly what you think it is. It's, you know, dealing with your herniation. It's pressing on the L5 nerve, which is, I mean, all of the symptoms you have, all of the, you know, numbness and weakness you have is all related to that. But they didn't, the previous practice hasn't done all of the testing. I need to see if it's chronic or urgent. And that would determine whether it's physical therapy or surgery.
And I really liked this guy for many reasons, but in particular, he narrated everything he did. So there were no questions about why he was moving Alex's leg and foot a certain way. And he explained what he was looking for. He explained thoroughly how the L5 nerve is a very, very important nerve and how all of her symptoms point to an impingement with that specific nerve. So we left there much better informed and felt as though he said several times, if anything gets any worse, go immediately to the ER for a neurosurgery consult. He said, you can message me on the portal and I'll answer you, but I'm going to save you that step because what I will tell you, and it's because we're so far away, what I'm going to tell you is go to the ER. So he made it very clear what an urgent issue this is, which also concerned us that nobody else really pushed it as urgent, and she still was continuing to decline.
From Texas forward,
yeah.
Everybody I met with just didn't seem like it was that big of a deal. I mean, in the emergency room, I wasn't in there with a stab wound or gunshot. And so they, you know, it wasn't a serious thing. And I take it that that area, that hospital in particular, sees a lot of trauma like that, just in my observations. And so I think that's why I was a weird patient for them. They wanted me in and out of there. They didn't want me in one of their rooms. But then for this practice that I've been with for over 10 years, to not have any sense of urgency when anything involving nerves freaks me out, because it's a big deal. It's just a big deal not being able to do what you need to do.
Well, and we have experience with your optic nerve and the issues you've had with that, and how when it wasn't attended to right at the beginning, you lost your peripheral vision. I mean, huge deal. If they're not attended to, big things can happen. And that's,
and quickly.
Yeah.
Like, it's not like you can just kind of hang out with this and it'll be fine. And I think the thing that concerns me the most, and I would say that the doctor I saw at Mayo confirmed this, is that the pain has gotten less and less and less over time. To like right now, I'm really not in pain. But that's kind of a concern that your body's not in pain anymore, but you're still having all these neurological symptoms. So,
and he said that's a problem,
right? So that, that's our main concern. And, you know, we have several tests and, images lined up. So we'll be back and forth to Jacksonville. Luckily, it's just about a 2.5 hour drive. It's really not that bad.
Straight on I-10.
Straight on I-10 is right. And so, you know, we'll be back and forth in the next couple of weeks. And because I have the boot now, I am going to start trying to work in the office as much as I can, just to kind of get back to that sense of normalcy. And it's good for me to, you know, be up and walking somewhat and keeping that movement. One of the tests the doctor had me do was to walk on, he wanted me to stand and walk on my tiptoes. And I couldn't do it. And that, and I hadn't tried to do that before. And so I was like, oh, so it really is.
Well, you
weak.
Almost fell over.
I almost fell over. And
he caught you.
It was pretty funny, actually. But, but yeah, so that's kind of where we're at right now. We don't have any answers. There's nothing confirmed really yet, in terms of treatment and what we're going to do moving forward. But, we just wanted to not leave y'all hanging any longer. And I kind of thought when we did that repost of that old episode, the little intro, that we would have answers by this week.
We did think so.
But that's not the case. So,
well, but we're on, I think we're well on the way.
I think so too. It's just that, you know, some things, and I was thinking about this today, all of the medical issues that I have had, and there are a lot of them, they all happened very quickly and then were treated very quickly. Like, I was diagnosed with cancer on a Tuesday and 1 week later I had a hysterectomy. So it's not like we've ever really let anything sit for any length of time. And so to be 3 weeks out from what I know has happened, to not have a treatment plan and be working on it, is just a little nerving and just frustrating as
well.
And
it's kind of scary that you you have all of this immobility, you know, the dysfunction, and it's just getting worse. It's certainly not getting any better.
Yeah, I would say it's just kind of staying the same. Yeah. And like, you know, I'm a fat girl, but I'm not a lazy girl. I'm up and moving and going places and doing things. And
Our shopping has really suffered.
really suffered. But even just like, I can't take my trash cans down to the curb by myself. Yeah. I mean, that's ridiculous. I do not like being in that kind of state. And so the frustration has just been mounting over the last few weeks. And so I'm ready for a solution.
But we did get a little chuckle because Alex, and we've talked about these on the podcast, Alex has several medical issues that are not common. And, you know, we have even joked about how we've seen him on different television shows about mysterious diagnosis.
Mystery diagnosis. Yeah. I think I've been on 3 episodes of that.
Yes. And so, you know, we've that's kind of helped us do research and understand that there can be really weird stuff out there. However, the doctor we saw last Friday said, well, you know, it looks to me like this is from herniated discs, and these symptoms you're having are pretty common with.
And he
this
may have
type
even
of
said their textbook.
Yeah.
And when he said that, I was like, I have never,
never been textbook
in my life. So,
we got a little chuckle out of that.
Yeah, that was pretty funny and added some levity. So, so the next couple weeks, we're just going to be in and out of Jacksonville, in and out of the Mayo Clinic, which we love. We, you know, really love the way they run things. And so we're confident that they'll figure out what needs to happen. But
yeah. And maybe on the 4th week episode, we'll have some answers.
Here is hoping. Here's hoping that we do, because I'm ready to be done. I have plans. I got things that I want to do.
Got things to do.
And I need to be able to do them. So I just don't like being in limbo. Like, I can't go to this event. I maybe can do this thing. I don't know. So I'm ready just to have some answers and to move forward. Well, thank you for listening to this episode and catching up with us a little bit today. We appreciate all of you for listening and hanging in there with us. If you don't already follow us on social media, you can find us at Down There Aware on Facebook, Instagram, Pinterest, Twitter, TikTok, all the places. And if you know anything about this Texas law, seriously, email us downthereaware@gmail.com or DM us on one of our social channels, because I would really like to know more about it. And if you know that your state maybe has that law too, I'd also like to know about that, because it seems like a concerning issue. And so we're just really, really grateful for all of you. And thanks for listening. And we will see you next week. Nope. Nope, nope, nope. We'll see you in 2 weeks. I'm not used to this schedule. We're 4 months in, and I'm not used to it. But we'll see you in the 4th week of April. Thanks for listening.